Tango Tango Papa 2017, June 23rd, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Effingham. Nope, not Effingham. Mount Vernon, Illinois. About a 70 or 80 mile difference there. So anyway, it's been a little over a month. I checked, it's been a little over a month since the last podcast. And, you know, again, I just, the motivation just isn't there to do it, and if it's not there to do it, then, you know, I found that I can't really force myself to do it, so, hence, I just don't do it. You know, my motivation has, best way to describe it is just kind of collapsed. But it's not just podcasting that has, I'm not just not motivated to do anymore. It's not only podcasing. I'm go days and days and days without opening up Facebook. I do look at news headlines. Once in a while, I'll read an article here and there, but I don't know. At this point, my online activities, I'm just not motivated to do them. Now, I do watch quite a bit of YouTube videos. Most of those kind of center around not really entertainment stuff, but fact-based type stuff. Some of us look like car reviews and, I don't know, there's a variety of subjects that I kind of, find enjoyable, but, and informative as well. But, as far as, entertainment type stuff, I don't know. I just haven't kind of felt compelled to even, I've not been watching any, or videos off of Netflix or what have you. Now, I probably will once I go home. I'm due home on the 27th. I should be home on the 27th. And then, while I'm home, I'll probably watch some Netflix or whatever. But in the meanwhile, my online activities have kind of collapsed, and if my motivation isn't there, then I have a, I can't force myself to do it, and but I don't know, the problem. I still look at headlines, and people are just as, seem to be just as upset as ever, even if not more so. They're even more upset than they were, if that's possible. And the problem is that, what is the point of, arguing your side? People have a side. Everybody has their side, and then we fall into the trap of trying to argue as if we're going to change somebody's mind. And, of course, it can never happen, especially as long as there's emotion behind the argument. And invariably, there is emotion behind the argument. So a lot of people deliberately put the emotion behind the argument. And they're offended if you tell them, as I often do, emotions are a form of insanity. And even, you know, whether they're people are on the left or the right, there are people that are repelled by that notion. They think, you know, I must be insane, or, you know, something's wrong with me for saying that. How dare I say that? They're precious emotions. You know, and of course, all the TV shows, you know, they like to, oh, well, it's our emotions that make us human. No, it's our emotions that make us, render us into animals. No better than animals. In fact, worse than animals. You know, how can you have a sane thought if it's, if, you know, if it's guided by or backed by emotions? It's insane. Utterly insane. You know, and then you have the people that are, you know, supposedly, they say they're guided by logic, and they come across as very intellectual. And invariably, you can tell, you know, the emotion is behind, you know, kind of the left-leaning emotion is behind it, typically. And they go jump through all kinds of intellectual hoops and disregard facts in order to sort of support their side. You know, and so, you know, but emotions, the point is, emotions are a form of insanity. They're a form of mental illness. They really are. And there's a lot of people now that are really just floundering around in their insanity. You know, and that's, you know, want to do that, have at it. Have at it. See how it helps you, see if it helps your, how your immune system holds up under that. And our health is pretty much based on our immune system. You know, whether, you know, regardless of what kind of disease it is, whether it's a disease that's, you know, kind of caused by bacteria or viruses or even cancer, your immune system really has control over whether, you know, if your immune system is down, it's, invites in all kinds of problems. And it's only the immune system that can stop problems with the body, you know, with the physical body. You know, and then you have the people that have the idea, whoa, we just take this vitamin and that vitamin and, you know, eat natural foods and we're going to eat organic and we're going to, you know, and it's kind of a compensation. You know, we're going to, it's kind of like the person that, you know, they've got some behavior that they want to do, and then, the doctor can, you know, the cure might be to, you know, cut a portion of them away with some sort of surgery, then they'll go, you know, there's a temptation to rationalize and think, oh, I'll just go ahead and do this, and then they can just cut out the bad parts once, you know, if I end up with the disease. You know, or kind of like the person, you know, the people sometimes that, you know, that have diabetes, and then they have their you know, insulin tablets or injections or whatever it is that they have, metformin. And then they have the idea, well, I can eat the sweets and I'll just use more medicine, or, you know, take, you know, and compensate for it. Compensate for the extra, you know, blood sugar or whatever. But ultimately, you know, you can play little games like that, but your emotions, eventually, they'll kill you. They'll be the death of you. You know, the other day I was at this place, you know, and I, you know, it turned out I didn't know if it was an, you know, I really didn't know if it was an unload, direct unload, or a drop and hook. And so anyway, in any case, I went in and I talked to the, you know, the woman in the receiving department, and I must have said something wrong, or she didn't like the way I said something, or, you know, and all of a sudden she snapped at me, you know. Well, fine and dandy. Let her snap away. Didn't bother me. But it caused me to realize she was waiting, you know, kind of like a coiled up spring, waiting to snap, waiting to find some person to snap at. You know, with whatever the trigger word was, or the phrase or whatever, she was waiting to snap. And so she, but like I say, she was all coiled up with the energy waiting for that to happen so she could snap. Now, I don't know if it didn't do her any good, because doesn't matter to me one way or the other whether someone likes me or not, or, you know, or if they, you know, have, you know, they're belligerent or not, or they have a belligerent tone in their voice or not, or malicious tone in their voice. I really don't care. Because I don't have to care. And the reason I don't have to care, you know, I've given this example thousands of times probably. You know, if someone gives you a compliment, do not, you know, you can do the polite thing and say thank you, but do not get a, you know, kind of an emotional charge out of it. Don't let it go to your head. Because as soon as you do, you're screwed. You need more and more compliments to try to achieve the same feeling. And then if someone snaps at you, I don't know, what was that? Oh, he dropped his trailer. If someone snaps at you, then, you know, it's like someone pulled the rug out from under you. So I learned a long time ago, don't take compliments, you know, don't imbibe them. And so therefore, if somebody's rude to me, or they make a face, or they snap, or, you know, they're belligerent, or they have a malicious tone in their voice, or they deliberately try to provoke it, you know, some reaction from me, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't have anywhere to go, and it ends up kind of coming back on them. But there's a lot of people. I'd say the majority, probably a majority of people that are just kind of walking around sort of like wound up like a spring, waiting for something, some person, place, or thing that they can strike out at, waiting for something to trigger them, like little automatons, waiting for something to snap at. That's a pretty bleak existence. So I have a couple of short comments. I've got one of them from Joel that he sent me a few weeks ago. And then there's another one that came from Jeremy just today. And so we're going to start out with first with the one from Joel. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom, this is Joel. I thought I was listening to your last show today. And one of the things I wanted to message you about was, have you watched Lost in Space yet? I finished most of it, although I'm going to rewatch the last episode. But I really, really liked it. I thought it was really good.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Yeah, I did watch it. I binge-watched it pretty quickly after it became available on Netflix. And I liked it. I thought there were, you know, of course, there were a lot of weak parts to it. That, you know, all the social justice warrior crap. You know, in the part, you know, they made the mother look like she was, you know, she was the smart one in the family, and she designed the ship, and, you know, she's just Miss Genius, and she, you know, she just designed their spaceships, and so on, you know. You know, and then it made it look like the dad, you know, any of the males on there, you know, look like kind of like mindless idiots to a large extent. Whereas, you know, if you ever watched the original Lost in Space, it was more, even though it was less serious science fiction, it did have a, you know, kind of a strong nuclear family component, you know, where the father, you know, the father was the head of the household, and then you had the mother, and then the, you know, their older daughter, and then a younger daughter, and then the youngest boy, and of course Dr. Smith, and then the robot, and then you know, another male character. So that was, you know, kind of the older daughter's boyfriend type thing. So, you know, and in this new one, I don't know, the characters, they, you know, they, like I say, it was, there's too much social justice warrior crap, and then, you know, and of course I saw lots of plot holes. You know, like if they were, you know, in the first episode, if they were frozen, instantly, then how is it that, you know, whenever they were trying to dig them out or thaw them out, how was it that their faces never froze? You know, if you know, the water or whatever it was froze instantly and trapped the, I think it trapped the girl or whatever, whoever it was that got trapped, how come their faces didn't freeze, you know, and yet here they are, you know, and it's, so there's all kinds of problems with that, you know, and then the robot, you know, the alien robot kind of putting itself back together, and then the part that I thought was pretty clever was the, you know, the Dr. Smith character, the one, you know, that woman that was impersonating Dr. Smith, I thought that was a, you know, because there you have a opportunity to show, you know, a true, you know, kind of a really bad sociopath, you know, and so there was an opportunity to kind of show a really, you know, kind of an interesting character. So, yeah, you know, and then you could have the other, people kind of reacting to the sociopath. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, they've got all this social justice warrior garbage going on. And so it's not realistic. I mean, the problem with fiction, you know, whether it's any, you know, fiction, science fiction, any kind of fiction, the problem with it is that authors and, you know, the writers will often, you know, kind of create worlds that really don't model, they don't really follow reality. They, you know, it's more of a fantasy. I've been listening to lots of audiobooks on YouTube. I don't know if I probably mentioned this maybe in the last podcast, but there's lots of audiobooks on YouTube. And, so now, you know, I've kind of listened to, you know, most of the Arthur C. Clarke stuff that's on there. And now I'm kind of going, you know, and I've listened to a bunch of the Isaac Asimov stuff. And now I'm, you know, kind of going through some, what's that guy's name? Heinlein? Robert A. Heinlein. his stuff, and you know, of course, he's got lots of stuff on there, or you know, people have put on there. Of course, all three of those authors are dead at this point, but so in any case, I'm listening to a one of Heinlein's books right now. Well, actually, it's not. It was an outline that he made, and then his estate, allowed this other author to take the, I guess it was a very detailed outline for the novel, and so this other author, is writing it, or wrote it, and I think, and it was kind of, I get the impression it was written in the early 2000s, and then spelled, Robert A. Heinlein, and then this other author, and I don't know his, don't know what his name is, I'd actually have to look, but it's written, in such a way you can tell that the guy, the author writing it is very liberal, and he, he's an atheist, he doesn't like religion, and so in his projected future, it's everything's kind of twisted around, and he keeps, and then he keeps, seems, the author himself seems obsessed with trying to tear down any kind of idea that there's a God, that he just wants to, instead of saying how could, showing how it could happen, he seems more intent on kind of criticizing religion, and and of course in his projected future, a lot of religions have just been done away with, and there's, and he basically is saying, without saying so, that the, Christian symbol is just like in his future, the Christian cross is just like, it's just as bad as a Nazi symbol, and it's been banned, so. But so writers often do that, and they'll kind of. But of course, it's fantasy, because there is a way that the real world works the way it works, and it doesn't work in the way an author wants it to. Even though the author and the author writes a book or whatever, then they can try to say, oh, well, this is what happened, and that's what happened, and this is my reality. When in fact, it's just it's just a warped fantasy. But of course, people do that. Authors, writers, they're just people. But people do that too. People do that too, and so you end up, you can end up with a show like this, Lost in Space, that's sort of entertaining. It could have been a whole so much more. It could have been a lot more satisfying than it was, but as it is, I don't know if Netflix is going to pick it up again or not. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. If they do, I'll probably watch some more of it. That's the nice part about Netflix, is that I don't have to like everything that's on there. There's no way I could like everything that's on there. And, and therefore there's no way I can watch everything that's on there. I can just kind of watch whatever I want to watch. And then the service is still worthwhile. So, and I know there's other series that are on there, and I just haven't been paying much attention to it lately. And besides that, I've been busy. I've been staying very busy, just about as busy as I can with work. So, I just don't have a whole lot of extra time to kill, as far as with watching videos or what have you. And I've also kind of been toying with the idea, what is the purpose of entertainment? is that, you know, and I've often said, you know, there's really nothing wrong with the concept of entertainment. You know, it's not, you know, it can't, entertainment can be a good thing. You know, of course, before television and radio, you know, you go back in time and, you know, they would have what they called morality plays, you know, that would be put on in various, you know, cities and towns. So you'd have, you know, in the morality play, you know, you'd have a, you know, it was kind of like the good guy, bad guy. And it would teach some, you know, the story would teach some sort of moral lesson. And that's actually good. That really is the only thing, you know, that really satisfies us as far as a plot for any kind of a story. What we're actually looking for, and the only thing that's really satisfactory, is a moral lesson. Now, of course, people try to twist more, you know, the morality around and, you know, turn the world upside down, right is wrong, wrong is right, and try to teach those kind of moral lessons, and of course they're backwards, and you know they don't work and they're not satisfying. And so typically that, you know, that's why you know, movies are, you know, they wonder why movies are in such a bad, sorry state. People aren't going to see movies. Well, why? And then they, of course, they want to blame TV and so on and so forth. You know, what's the point? You know, there's competition. Get over it. You know, you got competition. What can you do? Well, one thing you could do is, you know, come up with some compelling stories. And the only compelling story is an honest-to-God morality play. Start teaching real moral lessons. People will, you know, Mel Gibson made, more than $1 billion from Passion of the Christ. I think it cost about $37 million, $38 million to make that. You know, and it ended up grossing over $1 billion, and that's not counting the ongoing video sales. And yet Hollywood just howled whenever he made that movie. They hated him. They didn't want him to make that movie. And it was like showing a cross to a vampire. And even, you know, even though he walked away with the movie grossed over $1 billion, they still refuse to, you know, to see that. You know, there's a lot of money that could be made. In the modern age, sort of telling, making movie, TV and movie stories about real moral lessons, there's a lot of money that could be made, and they're just throwing it, you know, they'd rather just throw it away. Blame other things. So, anyway, I've got a short comment from Jeremy. So here is Jeremy.
Hi, Tom. It's Jeremy. I'm driving cross country from Virginia to Wisconsin right now on Interstate 80. We're just west of Sandusky, Ohio, and I'm with my two kids, bringing them to Wisconsin. They spent a couple weeks with their grandparents. And I told my youngest daughter I have a friend who drives a truck. If she has any questions for her, she always wanted to ask a truck driver. So the first thing she asked me was, is it scary driving a truck? So is it scary? And what's the scariest thing you've ever seen driving a truck? Vietnam, hope you're doing well. I actually just passed a red Schaefer truck, which made me think of you. So, figured I'd check in and see how things have been going.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeremy. So, what is scary? Is driving a truck scary? No, it's, I guess it depends on the person. Some people might think that it's scary. I don't. I can just drive all day long, and it's not something that bothers me, really. Now, scary things happen in front of me? Absolutely. And the thing that I don't like, and I already answered Jeremy back on Voxer, but the thing that I don't like, it's no surprise, I do not like driving in weather where there's ice or snow. That is my, just a nightmare. And then, compound that nightmare with mountains, as in, like, mountains in Colorado, and I, would just as soon not have anything to do with it. Now, of course, sometimes you get trapped in situations, like I did back earlier this year. I got, I was kind of, I was trapped at that it was like a little truck pullout thing at 11,000 plus feet there on I-70 for overnight. And of course it was snowing like mad and what have you, and didn't like that at all. But so that's what I don't, it's because it's one thing to be able to, kind of drive if the road is deserted and and you're driving along, especially in a truck or because you got a vehicle with a trailer, and it kind of drive along and go slow and be careful. But then you start mixing in a lot of other traffic, and then people still are too aggressive. They cut in front of the truck, that type of thing, and then it really becomes nerve-wracking. And so I do not like that kind of situation. And so typically what, if that happens, or if it's even in danger of happening, I'm going to stop. I'll find some place to stop if I can. But there are times when, you can't stop right away. There's no place to stop. That's the one situation that I do not like, is if the road is icy or snow covered. Don't like that at all. But otherwise, it's not that, I don't know. I don't find driving a truck scary at all. Some people probably, they may, I don't know. And then some people don't like driving. I've talked to a lot of people that don't like driving. They say it makes them tired, or they don't like doing it, or they can only drive for about an hour or two. But I don't know. I really enjoy driving. I can drive and do drive hours and hours and hours on end, and it really doesn't bother me. The only time where, if the road is, especially if it's, slick or something, and then there's no place to stop, then I don't like that. Or, and then you get into a sort of a halfway situation where the road is wet or it's raining very hard. Then it's partially slick, and then that can kind of create problems, because people still drive very aggressively, and sometimes, especially like when it first starts raining, if it starts raining hard and it hasn't rained for some time, there's been some time since it rains, a period of days or weeks since it rained, and it starts raining really hard, then there's a bunch of oil that's on top of the surface of the roadway. It'll just kind of come to the top of the, if there's water gathering on the roadway, the oil will float on top of it. And then you've got it's extra slick, and that can be very dangerous. And then, of course, vehicles hydroplane, where the tire sort of loses contact with the road, and it's just sort of floating on a film of water. And that's very bad. That can really create problems. So I don't particularly like driving when the road is wet, and it's raining. You know, and in those cases, I can't really stop. I have to keep going. Now, if it rains really hard, you know, sometimes people, if it's raining so hard, then people think, oh, I can't see, I've got to pull over. You're better off, typically, if you can keep going, turn on your emergency flashers and slow down and just kind of keep going. But if you see people that are pulled off on the side, that's really kind of dangerous because they'll pull right out in front of you. So it's best if you really feel like you have to pull off, it's best if you can really, you know, like get off on an exit, or if you're on a limited access road, or pull off somewhere where you can actually get away from, you know, well away from the roadway and not just in a breakdown lane. So, and then the other thing is just leave lots of room, you know, leave lots of room in front of you. People fail to do that, and it gets them into all kinds of problems, you know, that and being very aggressive, thinking, I have to be first. I have to zoom around and, you know, try to be at the first of the line. That's a big mistake. You know, so don't be aggressive and stay back away from the vehicles that are in front. You know, what's the point of being right on their tail? You know, or another thing I see people do is, if I'm riding with them, you know, and they'll just wait till the last minute and rely on their brakes being able to stop them. You know, so they'll apply their brakes pretty hard right before they have to stop. You know, you're adding extra wear to your brakes, but you're also taking the chance that, you know, what happens if you hit a slick spot? And then especially if you develop that habit and you drive that way when the road is slick, that's not a very good way to, you know, it's not a very good habit to develop. You know, you're better off driving in such a way that you don't have to apply your brakes very much, you know, and then not only then are you're avoided with, or you're awarded with less brake wear, but then if something goes wrong, you've got more time to stop. You know, if I'm driving along and I stay well away from the vehicles ahead of me, then when something goes wrong, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when something will go wrong at some point, then even if I will become distracted, no matter how good of a driver I am, I will be distracted at some point, then when something happens in front of me, if I'm well back from them, I can still be distracted and still have time to react and not have to take drastic measures if I'm far enough back. So, anyway, you want more podcasts from me, gonna have to start sending some more voice files. You know, come up with some topics, ask some questions. They could be the same ones that I talk about all the time. That's fine. I'm past the point of being able to do this without some kind of interaction. You know, and I think that's probably one of the, you know, early on when I was, there was a long period of time where I was podcasting almost every day. And looking back on that, I had lots of, you know, that was back, you know, when people were using lots of email, you know, and so I was receiving quite a bit of email. You know, with occasional voice files, but lots of email interaction. And so I had a lot of interaction going on way back when, you know, and that gave me, kind of impetus to, do the podcast. But if it's just a monologue with me talking, me alone talking, then, I've already gone through just about as much as I can, I've talked about everything that I can think of, and you know, without some sort of interaction, then you know, I just don't have any reason to kind of do it. So if you want some more podcasts from me more often, I need interaction. So you got to help me out here. Anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut it off here. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.